You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Not far from the Palm Springs Airport, there used to be an oasis. Yes, in 1986, the Oasis Water Park opened. And for decades, you could hear people laughing and screaming as they rode towering water slides under the desert sun and incoming planes. Well, now a chain-link fence surrounds the place. It's been a couple of years since anybody went for a ride, and some of the attractions are losing their battle against the elements. But now, an enormous old wave pool that's been here since the park welcomed its first guests is getting ready for its close-up. You see, the defunct water park is coming back as the Palm Springs Surf Club, a full-blown wave-riding destination. And that old pool, with a facelift, will be the star. Yeah, if you're thinking, Steve, this is Southern California. We have the beach for surfing. You're not wrong, of course. But the head of the tourism organization that markets the Coachella Valley, Scott White, has a pretty good counter.
I can't tell you how many times I've driven to the coast. I leave here and the sun is out and I get to the coast and it's cloudy, foggy, misty, it's cold. We're going to provide the perfect wave with the perfect weather.
The Palm Springs Surf Club is part of a new generation of artificial surf spots setting up shop out here. A couple of others are under construction with more in the pipeline. As the prospect of a surfboard under your arm and a date shake in your hand becomes reality, KCRW's Matt Gillum has a look at what it's going to take to hang 10 just off the 10 in the middle of the desert.
Why are all these surf resorts getting ready to open now? Ask the surfers pushing the edge of wave-making technology. Tom Lochtefeld is behind the tech at the Palm Springs Surf Club. He helped found Raging Waters in the early 80s. It included a wave pool, which was pretty underwhelming.
So I remember we fired up that wave pool. It was such junk. I couldn't believe it. I go, this has nothing to do with surfing. All wave pools throughout the world were just basically bumpy up and down chop machines. They didn't produce anything surfable. It had nothing to do with the sport.
A passion for surfing has guided Lochtefeld from his earliest days.
I was a good athlete. I could have played either at Stanford or Berkeley in football, but I wanted to surf, so I went to UCSD.
A love of the sport, an intuitive understanding of waves, and good business acumen led Lochtefeld to create SurfLock Technologies. After a lot of research and countless experiments, he's developed a system that uses the same tool nature does to form waves.
We're using air. Air is what makes the waves out in the ocean. We do the same thing as what the ocean does.
We're outside behind the SurfLock office. Next to a test pool in what's basically a little shed is a mishmash of pumps, valves, tubes, and computers. Standing at the controls of this pneumatic array is Michael Brown. He's a surf systems engineer who helped build and program what you're hearing. As the system warms up to make a wave, it sounds like a plane getting ready for takeoff.
That's all it is. It's just that the moving of the valve in a coordinated manner will give you the wave you want. Put your hand here, you can kind of hear it breathing a little bit, right?
On a sunny desert afternoon, pro surfer Shane Magnuson is sitting under a blowing easy-up tent in a patio chair at the old water park. It's basically a construction site now as the drained wave pool is being expanded. Magnuson is one of the backers of the surf club, as well as its
chief hydro officer. Which is a made-up title, but it's a real thing now, I guess. And I design waves utilizing various wave pool technologies.
In this case, it's SurfLock's air-based technology. Like a DJ at a soundboard, Magnuson can use what's basically a big iPad to change a bunch of parameters, pressure, timing, you name it, in each of the individual big pumps that push the water out.
There's probably like five guys who do what I do in the world, and the rest of them have PhDs. I'm just like this guy who surfs.
He's laughing, but his knack for manufacturing waves has led to a strange realization.
So you're constantly refining the product it's spitting out, and when I say product, I'm talking about waves, and that might be the weirdest thing for someone like me is to refer to a wave as a product, but that's essentially what we have here.
How you turn air into solid, or I guess liquid, products is proprietary magic. Several surf pools are in the works for the Coachella Valley, and each is using a different method to generate waves. One involves dragging something through the water to make a wake to surf on, while another method uses paddles. Magnuson says it actually makes sense for a concentration of these surf parks to locate here. This one is supposed to open in 2022, another soon after, and a couple more within 5 years.
Everyone's had their eye on Palm Springs. The reason being is the heartbeat of the surf industry has always been Southern California. You know, so you have this just overwhelmingly surf-centric population that's a two-hour drive. And the other thing we know about surfers is they love to take trips.
Seconding Magnuson's view is Doug Sherris. He's a partner in the company developing Desert Surf, a resort in Palm Desert that will have a wave pool as its primary draw.
For somebody who wants to take a surf trip, it's pretty attractive. You get more or less guaranteed decent weather. With a wave pool, you get basically guaranteed good waves. With the hospitality component to it, you get guaranteed, you know, quality lodging experience. You've got the golf and other activities right there.
By now, you're probably thinking these projects are going to use a lot of water. Desert Surf, for example, is planning to build a 5.5-acre lagoon that'll hold about 6 million gallons. Factoring in evaporation and at least one annual draining for maintenance, Sherris says they're looking at using about 20 million gallons per year. Yeah, it's a lot, but the surf entrepreneurs want you to compare that with all the other environmentally unfriendly recreation that's already firmly planted.
Which sounds like a tremendous amount of water. It's roughly the amount of water that a hole of golf uses. So while providing a recreational activity that arguably will cater to as many, if not more, people than play golf on the average golf course in a day, we're only using the amount of water that one hole of that golf course would use.
Since Desert Surf is going in at an existing golf resort, they've launched a program called Turf for Surf that will remove enough grass to bring the pool's water impact down to zero. Sitting in the dry and empty old water park that will soon be the Palm Springs Surf Club, I bring up the shadow looming over all these new developments with Shane Magnuson. What about the ocean?
There will never be a replacement for the ocean. Not at all.
Magnuson views these pools as complementary to ocean surfing, not a replacement for it.
Surfing the ocean teaches you lessons. There's a culture there. There's a respect. There's unwritten rules and everything. Now you're packaging it in kind of a nice, cushy bubble where it's like, there are rules. You don't have to fight with other people for waves. There is an off button in case someone gets hurt. And these are all good things, but they're kind of hard things for people to accept, to have based their life around this whole ocean culture.
Although the experiences will be different, Magnuson is looking forward to people hopping out of the pool after catching a wave he made, still beaming.
When I see essentially what we call just like the stoked faces, you know, the surfed out like look where people are just like, dude, I'm just so pumped. That's what I get most excited about.
With several surf destinations on the horizon for the Coachella Valley, there's a lot to be stoked for. For KCRW, I'm Matt Gillum.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Over the past 8 months, with a pandemic making everything that much harder, there are important things that have continued to hang in the balance, like the scales of justice. LA County Superior Court has struggled to maintain due process while trying to keep all the players in the courts safe and healthy during COVID. At first, all jury trials were suspended. You remember that back earlier in the year? Now some have resumed, in part to grant clients the right to a speedy trial, but also to help offload the overwhelming backlog of cases that has been built up. Many LA County public defenders are staring down the barrel of insurmountable caseloads, stress, fears of getting COVID, and trying, of course, to uphold the law for their clients. And now they're voicing their concerns. Nikhil Ramnani is an LA County public defender. He's also the president of the Public Defender Union, and he's been on this program before, and we welcome him back. Hi, Nikhil.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for having me again.
You bet. One of your colleagues, Ernesto Diaz, recently raised the alarm of all this stress and obviously the high caseloads,
for defenders from the possibility of getting COVID. And the subject line, I read this email thread, and the subject line was, "Cry for help, the lethal consequences of chronic stress in the time of COVID-19. It was heartbreaking to read that. Talk to me about the issue of caseloads right now. What an average amount of caseloads for public defenders is.
You know, it really is kind of disparate based upon, you know, locations. We have about 35 different work sites, and so there's different prosecutorial practices and agencies at each of those. But right now, our felony attorneys are, you know, carrying caseloads far excessive of what's normal. So anywhere from, you know, 30 plus to 60 to 70 felony cases. And in a post Prop 47 world, that's a lot of very serious cases. That's not low level. There's really no low level felonies anymore. The misdemeanor attorneys throughout the county are drowning, definitely. I mean, they're over 100 into the hundreds. And, you know, I think we've definitely entered that territory where caseloads are threatening our client's right to a constitutional and effective defense.
I mean, obviously, this is about your clients and upholding the law, making sure that justice is served, no matter which way the scales tip. But when I was reading Ernesto's email, I want to bring this up because it says, "I've always been able to weather the stress that goes along with the job, but this is an entirely different working environment, an environment that he says, quote, has already proved fatal. Are people in your profession getting COVID? They're dying. I mean, obviously, nobody is immune to this. Nobody is obviously able to stem this off, right?"
Absolutely. I mean, we lost a public defender earlier this year from COVID-19, Sal Salgado, and we, you know, that should have been the biggest alarm to our workplace and the courts, that we had a real risk of people dying. Now, we've had 20% of our department, the last time we did a census, the union, quarantine because of exposure, and we've had dozens of confirmed cases. So that's definitely going on here in LA County. So we know that this happens in court, and you know that adds this unbelievable amount of stress to this already stressful job. I think there's two elements that just really need to be highlighted. The communities that we serve are most devastated by COVID-19, right? Economically as well as epidemiologically. And so we're taking on that secondary stress of dealing with our clients, having to deal with, you know, funerals and sick loved ones and lost jobs, but also walking into court every single day. A lot of us just do not feel safe because both the courts and our department have not problem solved, you know, just glaring inadequacies in health and safety protocols in the courthouses.
Criminal jury trials are resumed now. Civil jury trials are continued through January, right? We're not doing civil jury trials. Have you had a jury trial so far?
I have. I had a jury trial start about 2 weeks ago. And
how you doing with that?
You know, it ran into some pretty predictable problems. You know, there's been a variety of issues, including really difficult to get jurors into the building. We're getting like approximately 50% reporting for jury duty, which, you know, raises issues of what kind of cross-section of the community is coming in. And that remains to be litigated. But anecdotally, I'll tell you that, you know, the people that hail from my clients' communities are not coming into jury duty. You know, there's issues with the fairness of the procedures because people are masked during jury selection and during court. And I think, you know, human credibility is really reliant upon, you know, viewing people's faces and making eye contact with the full facial expressions. But also just generally, you know, people are getting sick. And so in my trial, it was delayed because my client, who lives in a congregate group facility, came down with symptoms of COVID in the middle of jury selection. And, you know, the district attorney's office and the judge tried to, you know, ignore public health kind of guidelines and try to proceed, even though that would place myself and the rest of the courtroom actors in great jeopardy.
Well, that's quite an accusation, though. That sounds shocking, actually.
Mm-hmm. I think that the problem is because the courts have kind of willfully indicated that they're not directly subject to the public health or CDC guidelines, that they're advisory to them as an independent branch of government. individual lawyers are having to litigate these issues or fight these common sense issues in each of the jury trials. I have two colleagues that came down with symptoms yesterday, and their trials have been derailed or are delayed now because they're on quarantine. And each of those kind
Wait, they think that they're exempt from CDC guidelines?
There's been, you know, our union has been in a lot of discussions about what protocols should be implemented. And they indicate that local public, LA County public health guidelines and CDC guidelines are advisory on the court because there are issues with the court as a separate branch of government being, you know, directed to employ these practices. So they follow the ones that they want to follow and ignore others.
I mean, that sounds, I mean, we've got to have a standard, right? Like, hey, we don't want anyone getting sick. So what are best practices to make sure that, you know, clients don't get sick, public defenders don't get sick, the jury doesn't get sick, the judges don't get sick, the people, you know, the bailiffs, everybody else in that courtroom doesn't get sick. And it doesn't sound like you're telling me that we can even agree on best practices.
We're definitely not agreeing on best practice. One of the kind of the glaring areas that we continue to have a problem with is, you know, it's impossible for us to follow CDC guidelines or DPH guidelines inside of these lockup facilities where we go into to confidentially interview or discuss our cases with our clients. And, you know, one of the most recent examples was the Department of Public Health came in and inspected a lockup facility in the court, in the Central Criminal Courts building. And they determined that the ventilation does not meet safe standards and it's unsafe in there. And so we found that out 7 months into the pandemic, right? And so now we're not using that room. But, you know, there hasn't been widespread inspections of all the facilities in which we have to come closer than 6 feet with our clients because of just the nature of the work. And they're still missing plexiglass and other personal protective equipment and enforcement in the jails and the lockup facilities that really make, you know, our job as public defenders and the interpreters and the court staff and the bailiffs who have to have close contact with people in custody really dangerous. And I'm not sure how we go forward because you're right, Steve. I don't think we can even agree on what needs to be done moving forward.
A story we're going to keep following, obviously, as we move on. Nikhil Ramnani, public defender in LA County, also president of its local union chapter. Nikhil, thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, we reached out to LA Superior Court for comment on Nikhil's claims, by the way, and they say mask usage and social distancing protocols are required in courtrooms and elevators, that they're trying to require fewer instances of in-person appearances for filings and clerical requests, that they're also enhancing their online services and implementing remote appearance technology in all of their courtrooms. And they say they're balancing, quote, the right of public access to proceedings, freedom of the press, public health considerations in the midst of a pandemic, and the safety and well-being of our staff, judicial officers, justice partners, and court users, end quote. This is Greater LA on KCRW. COVID-19 has claimed the lives of so many people. It is awful. And it's obviously upended a lot of lives, too. You just heard about public defenders struggling to do their jobs in a pandemic. But what about everyday mom-and-pop businesses that have been hit so hard? Maybe some of your favorite restaurants or barbershops, clothing stores. Well, we want to close out the show today on a positive note with someone who's trying to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Filmmaker Jack Henry Robbins visited some of his favorite places, mostly small businesses that are still open, but may not manage to keep it up much longer in this pandemic. He talked with their owners about what it's like for them, and he turned it into an Instagram story that he calls The Spot We Love.
The ceiling coming down and COVID and shut down by the health department and all my refrigeration broke. And I don't know, I can't imagine walking away from these four walls. I feel like they're mine. And I'm not really ready to give it up yet. I've put 10 years of my life in this place, like almost 6 days a week.
Just one example of how small businesses are really taking it on the chin these days. Jack Henry Robbins joins us right now. Hey there.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
I'm all right. It sounds like a lot of people are not all right, though. And, well, let's talk about this woman who we just heard, Liz Fishbach. She runs a bar and a nightclub called 1642. It's on Temple Street, 1642 Temple Street, which is just across the 101 from Echo Park. Tell us about her and what she's going through.
Well, Liz is an incredible person. She runs 1642 Bar, which is like an old time jazz ragtime haven. You know, all the people who wear clothes like from the 1920s all hang out there. And it's somewhere I've enjoyed for, you know, 10 years. And when I was on the East Coast for a bit, taking care of my mom. And then when I came back, I realized that so many of the places that I love are on the verge of closing if they already haven't. And 1642 is one of those places that, how now, you know, she has no outdoor seating, so she has to now pivot into selling wine out of her bar. So this is why I started this project, was to try to shine a light on the spots I love and try to get people to be aware of the places that really need our help.
What is it that got you started doing this? I mean, is it just a, wow, these people are really struggling, I want to tell their stories? I mean, you're a filmmaker. That's what you do, right?
Well, I think that, you know, the next 3 months in Los Angeles will define our city for the next 10 years. You know, it's about, if you're lucky enough right now to be able to spend money on takeout food or buy gifts for people on Christmas, what I hope is that we all collectively are smart about how we spend our money. You know, In-N-Out is going to be fine. You know, these places down the street that you think may never close, things that are deeply ingrained in the heart of LA, like the Bob Baker Marionette Theater, are on the verge of closing. And we just have to, we all have to work together to try to check up on our places and make sure that how they're doing. And, you know, if that means that the wine shop down the street from you that has a line out the door every day, they're probably going to survive the next 3 months. But, you know, 1642, who's selling wine outside of their bar, you know, that's the place you got to buy from.
You mentioned Bob Baker and the Marionette, you know, puppet theater, which for the longest time was over there on Glendale Boulevard, right? And just west of downtown LA, going toward Echo Park. And you know, I used to pass it all the time for years. It's now in Highland Park, right? They took over a theater in Highland Park. They tried to open up, but then they were opening it up during the pandemic, which made it very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, for people who don't know, Bob Baker Marionette Theater is like one of the dreams of Los Angeles. You know, it's like walking into a hazy, mystical story, you know, and they launched a fundraising campaign yesterday, actually, because if they don't raise a pretty substantial amount of money by January, they're going to close.
You talked to Alex Evans, who took over as head puppeteer over there, right? After Bob Baker died. Let's hear from Alex.
Now's the time to kind of book a show, see a show, donate, support, and like we work around the clock to make all the avenues like people can get involved and help us out in so many different ways. But yeah, now's the night. Like it means the world. Every day we're making kind of like what feels like life and death decisions of like who can we hire, who, like, when do we need to fire, like how do we keep the building, and so on and so forth.
How do we keep the building? There are no performances happening inside, especially in LA, and a lot of places, obviously. Let's finish out the program and talk about one more business that you spoke with.
I love to make people like themselves when they look in the mirror. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people help me out too with their conversation. I learn stuff from people that's in business. They discuss business and I listen to it and I learn stuff like that. People solve my problem, I solve theirs.
His name's Luke Walker in Pasadena. He's an 80-year-old. You would never realize it because he's so spry, but he's been cutting hair since the age of 18, and it's a family-run business in Pasadena, and they could not be more warm, wonderful people. And he's an amazingly incredible guy.
I want to thank you for what you do, Jack, a filmmaker. And by the way, you can find his Instagram project at The Spot We Love. This is on Instagram at The Spot We Love, and all those stories are there. You can follow along as well. And as he mentioned during this interview, he's going to add some more too, and solicit more from you as well. So if you know a business that perhaps could be spotlighted here, he would certainly love to take that on as well. Jack Henry Robbins, what a cool story and really a cool thing to do to help the mom and pops all across greater LA. Thanks for being here.
And thanks, Steve, for giving us this platform. You rock, man.
And you rock for tuning in today. Tomorrow, we're going to take you to a community cookout to help the hungry in East Hollywood. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Tell us how you're doing, what you're thinking. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast, too, while you're there. Jenna Cagle, Kevin Tidmarsh, Sonia Geis, Amy Ta, Mario Saavedra, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen this evening. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Please stay safe. Keep your wits about you. Have a great night.